Coming today, and I thank Alice Horwitz for organizing this meeting. I found this background today, which maybe symbolizes the issues that we're facing, trying to change directions in terms of caring management has been a long-term process and something that we're interested in. I'm going to describe a number of events that happened over the last 10 years and the current standing of the International Care Risk Classification and Management System. Before I start, I serve on the board of directors of SS White, so a company that sells birds, but they are very interested in minimally invasive dentistry, so they declare the conflict of interest first. So I'm going to be on the same level field, the playing field, is I'm going to start with some definitions of caries and public health too, and then talk about the new caries management systems and the International Caries Classification and Management System. This is the definition that I use in for public health, and it's different than the definition that the AA PhD uses. And it expands the vision from only focusing on community health and population health programs to a scientifically based specialty of dentistry and public health that integrates knowledge and experiences from biological sciences with dental, behavioral, public health, educational, and political sciences, and applies tools for management, from management, marketing, and advocacy. The goal is to promote health and oral health and provide primary, secondary, and tertiary dental care for individuals and populations. That means one thing is that dentistry and what we provide in a dental practice is part of a public health system. And what is done in that practice, multiplied by millions of providers, is a part of the public health system and a concern for us. So the emphasis is more on the social, economic, political, and cultural determinants of oral health and comprehensive dental oral health care models that promote oral health. And that's why I'm interested into how we manage disease and how dentists manage disease, because most of the resources in the country, if you look at the $120 billion, maybe John is something around that number, that we spend on dental care in the United States is mostly spent in private practices. Very few percentage, a small percentage, goes to public health programs. So the outdated definition of caries is that it's a localized destruction of calcified tissues initiated on the tooth surface by decalcification of the enamel, followed by lysis of the organic structure leading to cavity formation. So the outdated definition is that caries is a cavity. And that's what we have measured for a long period of time in all our epidemiological surveys. And that's it's very useful data, but has also a very limited scope in terms of understanding the disease process. So lesions like these, which are very common actually, they are in the U.S. population and even Canada and other developed countries, there may be about 3 to 1 of these lesions. Three of these lesions, the non-cavitated lesions to cavitated lesions, are usually either ignored or managed like any other lesion. So tendency to, if you have not heard about the board lesions that dental students search for, they search for lesions like these to fill them, which in my opinion is very unethical and unwise. So we manage disease as a profession for a long period of time through the drilling and filling of teeth. This is the temple in the 1940s or 50s. And this is our new preclinical lab. Again, we focus on how we drill teeth. So that's what we need to change. So this is the definition that Bob Solwitz, Nigel, and I wrote in Lancet. Is dental caries is a localized destruction of susceptible dental hard tissues by acidic bacterial products from fermentation of dietary carbohydrates. That is influenced by social, economic, behavioral, physical, mental, and microenvironmental factors, and there's a lot of them, including literacy, which is something that Alice likes a lot. There are a lot of factors that impact on disease that we have to consider in prevention. We cannot just focus on the mechanical aspects of prevention as a tool to prevent the disease. The signs of caries start in the biofilm. So now we have to rethink. This is not a disease of hard tissues. It is a disease that's manifested in hard tissues. But in order to attack it from a preventive point of view, we have to understand what's going on around that hard tissue. Because by changing what's around the hard tissue, we can really deal with the disease itself. And fluoride, to a certain extent, deals with what's going on around the hard tissue and what happens in the in the heart tissues, the enamel dentin, when there is demineralization. So this concept that's now emerging, and there's actually now people who are doing microbiome screening for gut bacteria, is we started in the pre-1960s. I wasn't a student then, but I was students in the 70s. We're talking about karyogenic bacteria and so on, and diet-bacteria interactions. We moved to the specific plaque hypothesis with Walter Loesch in the 70s, 80s. And then we start to talk about biofilm ecology, and there's a lot of written about this. But currently, the thinking is that this is more complex than a biofilm, because a biofilm is talking about something external that's acquired on the surface, any hard surface. This is something that we live with. It's part of our life. Without the microbiome, we cannot really live. So the Economist wrote a very nice article in 2012, is that the traditional view that a human body is a collection of 10 trillion cells, which are themselves the products of 23,000 genes, for in the nooks and crannies of every human being, and especially his or her guts, dwells the microbiome at 100 trillion cells, bacterial cells, 700 species bearing 3 million non-human genes. Humans are not single organisms, but superorganisms. So we are really multiple organisms in one. So we have to understand disease and health from a different perspective now. And this is what happens in the biofilm, or with the microbiome. You have at least 3,600 species that we know of today. When I was a dental student, I think they were talking about hundreds. So a significant change. Different types, genomically unique organisms. 10 of these really has been the focus of dentistry and dental research. That has to change because now we are doing screenings for microbiome. In the future, you hear oral microbiome screening. They live under nutrient-dormant conditions in very complex communities. They send in messages to each other, and they interact to outside factors as a group and as a community. And that's why they are very resistant to antimicrobials. That's why chlorhexidine has a very limited effect on them, or all the antimicrobials that you use. They are more intelligent than that. So by understanding this, we understand that when we look at an array of bacteria for caries, you see the difference in the diversity of the non-caries subjects versus the specificity of certain surviving bacterial species that could withstand the acidic challenge in the caries subjects. So now we have a different issue here, is how do we maintain diversity? Diversity is life. And in caries, there is less diversity in the microbiofilm. So dental caries has been said before, actually, since the 90s, almost 20 years ago, that dental caries primarily the consequences of physiological adaptation by endogenous plaque bacteria to a low pH environment. So it's endogenous, it's not coming, something within us, is it within the oral cavity. Now, understanding that is very important, and I'm leading to why I'm giving you this very short background in this area, is that some people have a lot of bacteria, large volume of, you don't see it here because of the light, but there's biofilm or microbiome covering most of these teeth, and these teeth do not have caries, where others develop caries. So question is why? There is a balance, and this is from John Featherstone and Doug Young, balance between demineralization and remineralization going on all the time, and it's important to understand that this process is dynamic. And they have the model, but this model may not be complete because these models do not explain all the variation we have in dental caries, so there's more. And now we have to rethink scientifically and from a public health point of view how we understand the disease even better than what we have understood before. But there are some risk factors. We can build systems around them today, and we build it to prevent disease. Now, all of this background may explain why the burden of disease is still very high around the world. In the Americas, both North and South America, the WHO estimated that about 40% have 45% has moderate caries level, and high is about 15. Whatever metric you use, this is a huge, prevalent, chronic disease that still affects a lot of people. This is an interesting slide because we have focused a lot on access to care and services and preventive services on what we do. But this slide from New Zealand reveals a lot because these are children who have been participating in a school-based preventive program for all their lives, but there are disparities among them. And the disparities is related to something called deprivation. Do they have resources at home? Do they have support? Do they have wealth that they could live on? So the children who are most deprived are having higher levels of disease. There is something more than just the factors that we know of. Even if we provide preventive care and services to all, we still have disparities, and we need to understand that. So that leads me to that managing caries through a drill and fill operation is a problem, and we need an integrated, comprehensive, sustainable models to reduce the caries burden. We need to move away from detect cavities and drill and fill to what we do now to do. We talk about restorative care, routine preventive care, and non-integrated solutions towards integrated systems to maintain a healthy microbiome focused on preserving tooth structure. Preserving tooth structure is our aim, because when we cut a tooth, we cannot replace it. So we have to find ways to change the way we cut cavities. And that's what led us to, I'm going to jump about decades. So we landed in Temple in 2011, 12, and we brought everyone in the world and said, what should we do? And they didn't agree. They can't agree, because each one of them had a system. They weren't promoting their system. However, they agreed on something very important. They all agreed that the goal of the caries management is to preserve dental tissues first and restore only when indicated. And that's a profound mission. We asked then every one of them to say, okay, in that paper that I just showed you very quickly, we said to them, okay, write your system to do that. And we immediately discovered that there are systems that are incapable or not complete. The one that was complete was the ICDAS group. The ICDAS, which I am a co-chair of, had a lot of the tools to achieve the goal. And it started in 2002. So it's almost 11, 12 years and 150 publications. So our group has really took it to the next level. In 2010, we started with the International Caries Classification Management System. And the idea is that we will develop a full manual of operation with training program, free of charge, everyone will access it, and how to detect, diagnose, risk assess, manage with everything, which I'm going to show you a synopsis of. The manual has been written. It's 137 pages. We're editing it right now, and then it will be available to the public with training manuals, with training videos, hopefully early in 2014, step by step. So it's time really for all of us, national, global programs, to manage caries with a focus on health rather than restorative care. We have been saying this for a long time, but now we have a tool to implement it. The outcome is really health, and this is not something that's new. For those who believe in G.V. Black, before he died, he said that. He said that enamel caries is the most important disease that everyone should focus on. And then we forgot about enamel caries for a long period of time. So he discovered that these early lesions are really the beginning of the problem. And if we focus on understanding the early lesions, we can manage the disease better. He was very frustrated in this article, which is the last speech he gave before he died. Caries enamel appears in teeth of patients from day to day. These lesions are found in pits and fissures, occlusal surfaces, and proximal and facial tooth surfaces. And you can see this. Yeah, you can see it. That fissure, that's when I worked with Wusang a long time ago. This is from Detroit, and we have really an early lesion and newly erupting tooth. This is where prevention should start, with the mother, with the caregiver, and with the fluoride, and even professional follow-up of these lesions. You have all of these lesions, which actually these are most of them appeared in the JADA article on sealants. Now we know the source of them. And all of these are lesions that are non-cavitated early that could be prevented without drilling teeth. So I'll take you now to 2013. And this is the International Caries Classification Management System. There were 73 people from around the world. There were 23 dental schools represented from the U.S. And that's the system that we developed, and we're writing right now. We have the first draft of the manual. So the mission is preserve dental tissues first and restore only when indicated. And so the guiding principles is to prevent caries from developing. So that's primary prevention, as public health talks about primary prevention. Control the disease process, which means that this is secondary prevention. You control disease that starts from progressing. manage the risk status and risk factors of a patient, reverse existing lesions to limit the damage to healthy sound tooth structures, and maintain and improve dental health trajectory of patients on a continuum of dental health scale with a strong emphasis on primary prevention. That means we move people from disease to health, and that's what we should be paying for, not the procedures. So whatever we pay for procedures, the question is the patient healthier? Now, this movement has started in medicine but hasn't came to dentistry. So what our model is simple is that we're going to structure a document based upon how we view intuitively dentists should operate. So the first thing is going to be always initial talking to a patient, collecting information about risk factors, then moving to a clinical exam. A clinical exam and risk assessment clinically so that you can detect, classify the disease as well as understand it in terms of the staging of the disease and risk factors. Then we have spent a lot of time on synthesis and decision-making tools leading to a treatment plan or a comprehensive patient care plan. That's a new term, comprehensive patient care plan, because we don't address the disease but the risk factors of the disease. And there will be different components in the treatment plan, preventing caries initiation, primary prevention. So imagine dentists are going to talk about primary prevention. That's what we need to learn. It's not a routine. It's something that you have to make a decision on based upon analysis of a lot of data. Preventive management of early caries, secondary prevention or control, tooth-preserving operative plan. I'm going to use TPOP a lot, tooth-preserving operative plan. There's a whole section written. I'm going to present only two slides on it. Because I don't have time. Review, monitor, and recall. Now, review is behavioral factor review. So this is the recall, we do it every 6 months. This is if I'm going to intervene with a patient, I need to review whether they are adopting their goals through a process of engagement. The monitoring is the monitoring the lesions activities and see over time and their recall. So this is something called the care cycle, which summarizes what I said in a different way. But the central goal is always is the preserve tooth structure. So the manual is really organized around these boxes and leading to a management plan. So again, we're moving from the intuitive decisions. I think Jim Bader and his group in North Carolina did excellent studies of saying what dentists decide and then explain. Intuitive decision model. Physicians do that too. And then focus on restoration to classification of disease stages, because to manage disease at different levels in terms of control, prevention, and TPOP, tooth preserving operative procedures, we need to classify the disease, we need to assess risk, and we analyze and diagnose the problems of the patient and develop a management plan. And for that, we need to stage the disease. And the staging of the disease will be in these four stages: sound, initial, moderate, and extensive. For each of these categories, and we collapsed a 6-point scale to a 4-point scale. For each of the categories, there will be recommendations of how the disease is managed. For the initial, there will be no handpiece at all. For the moderate, there will be a very minimal removal of tissue. And the extensive is the large cavities, that we also have to work on challenging some of the concepts, the unsupported enamel concept, opening the box to be free, clearing the floor. All of these are concepts learned in dental schools that are no longer applicable today in 2013. This is the ICDAS 6 stages, which actually were developed with support from NIDCR in 2001. And we tested them first in Detroit, and now there's 150 papers written on them all over the world. This is the sound, initial stages, moderate, and severe. Now, we cannot classify things only based upon clinical exams. We have to rely on other tools, for example, radiographic examination, and that's coming very soon. So this is really clinically a code one. You cannot see it, but it's the only way to see this one is you dry the tooth and you look at it to remove plaque or microbiome, and you see the white demineralization line. This is really the beginning of disease control and prevention, code one, and then another early lesions, all code one. And then we come to lesions like this one, which most likely, if there's a stick in them, dentists used to, and maybe a lot still, will fill them. But when you open them, they're basically at the enamel level, DEJ level. There is no need really to open these lesions and subject this tooth to destruction. Then from the caries classification, we move to the caries activity, and there is no tool. There is no magic bullet for caries activity today. And we need more research on that. But we have written, and there are some testing of initial criteria for caries activity based upon the characteristics of the service, location of the lesion, the length of the age of the patient, the age of the lesion. So you can see some characteristics that I have labeled, but lesion close to the gingival margin covered by plaque in a child or a young adult is most likely to be active. It has certain service characteristics. Some people could figure out and feel the ditching in that or the pitting in that service. Some people can't. So it requires some skill to find them. But we have some criteria because there's no tool today. We move to the risk assessment, both the interview part as well as the clinical part. And the group, the 73 people, decided on, this is a three-day workshop of discussions. Medical health, frequency of exposure to sugar drinks, fluoride exposure, caries experience of mothers and caregivers, and dental history, history of extractions, restorative care, oral health behaviors, inadequate oral hygiene practices, socioeconomic status as measured by local standards. The most consistent predictor of future caries is really past caries experience, which tells that there is some ecology in that individual that we are not changing, because that's the best predictor of the future. Clinical risk factors is the biofilm, the gross indicators of dry mouth, and previous restorative care. And then we have this buffer, which is WHO uses, exposed pulps, ulceration, fistula, and abscesses. Appliances, exposed root services, all are risk factors. When we put this into a matrix, and each of these cells, when you click on them, you'll get really a recommended preventive strategy. We have the risk factors, and we have also care status at the patient level. And these are what we refer to as likelihood risks. The likelihood is low, moderate, or high based upon a combination of risk factors as well as caries risk status. So this is what the ICCMS recommend. And there is a document, and Wusang has worked on this with us, is to have for each of these cells will have recommended based upon the best evidence. Every section is documented by the best evidence. For radiography, very quickly, because I don't have time, there are different classification systems. We adopted this classification system, and we did two versions, because in certain countries, they do not fill until caries in a radiograph reaches one-third of dentin. That is not acceptable in the United States and other countries. So we moved that to a moderate. That means you can drill that tooth conservatively. So there are two versions based upon the location, and the research will show which of those would work better. And then that will lead to another decision matrix, which is really a combination of the clinical with the radiographic. And you can see that there is all these cells are M initial, these management initial, which is the control type of management. Here, this cell has different choices based upon whether you live in Denmark or you live in the United States. So there are different choices in terms of management of the cell. This is in one-third in dentin and a moderate lesion. And then you have the moderate lesions here. And these are extensive, the large cavities into dentin that we need to manage. Again, there is a recommendation for each of these with scientific evidence to support it as of today. So that brings me to this concept of TPOP. We actually spend a lot of time thinking about how to drill a cavity today without destroying sound tooth structure and how you remove caries. When do you stop removing caries? So there's a lot of documentation in the document about this. But it applies to all restorative care. The concept of just removing tissue for the sake of removing tissue to place a restoration, as one student told me, or when I asked one faculty, I don't recall, in a school I would not name because I was teaching there, why did the cavity is this big? It's because the plugger is that size. So I said, why don't you bring a smaller plugger to put the amalgam in and save the tooth structure? We're not thinking really about it. So this is a lot of details, and I'm just presenting you some of it here in terms of the TPOP. Access to dental caries should only be sufficient to allow for appropriate removal of caries tissues to create a peripheral enamel and dentin seal. So we're still talking about sealing the lesion. and more materials and better materials to seal these lesions. And the shape and extent of the cavity perforation is only dictated by the spread of the caries lesions. I have 1 minute. I don't want to forget root caries. There is a decision tree for root caries that will classify it based upon non-cavitated, cavitated, and based upon activity. And that's a disease that's neglected. Actually, there's very limited research on root caries. So anyone who's interested in root caries, there's a whole world here to do research on in terms of using this decision tree and applying it and assessing it, which lead to another of these decision matrices that we have prepared. Again, each one of them has recommended evidence and management strategy for them. Final two, in the last few seconds, in order for a system to work, we need to reimburse differently. And there should be a reimbursement based upon outcomes. So we have sound tooth services maintained. We pay to keep teeth sound. That's what we should pay for. Active caries lesions controlled, dentinal cavitated lesions restored, which what we pay now for. But teeth with peripheral infections, periapical infections treated, and patient caries status managed. These are should be codes that we add, and we actually try to add them to Axiom now, which is used by dental schools. Sound strategy starts with having the right goal. So what is our goal? Is restorative CDT codes or disease management? And that's what we need to. So the final thing, this model, ICCMS, and I know there is a workshop on workforce, is ideal for what I call the funnel model of, provision of care. The reality of it, we have a lot of people who don't need a lot of treatment and maybe manage very conservatively through a disease control strategy, and that involves a different member of the health team. Dentists don't have to spend time on approaching this in an integrated